Hello, and welcome to another episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Rethink Possible explores pockets of awesomeness in school districts as told by school district leaders. I'm Bob McDowell, your host. Let's dig in. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with David Law, superintendent in Minnetonka Schools. Thanks for being with me today, David.
Thanks, Bob. It's good to be here.
Yeah, and today we are talking about student and community engagement. So if you can start by just letting us know what brings you to this point to want to talk about this.
Bob, it's a good question. I think as we talk about concepts like polarization and divided communities and rebuilding trust in American public education, one of the most important things we can do is make sure a community knows and trusts us. And I'll give just a fact pattern from Minnetonka. When I took this job in 2022, we had just done a community survey, and in August, the community reported a drop of about 15 points in I trust the school board. And so we did a school board goal setting, and it went from 88 points to 72 points, I think, or in that range. And the board said, we want to rebuild community trust. And so we brought in a speaker, and the speaker said, the most important thing you can do is make sure your community feels involved. You're publicly setting goals to move forward and reporting on those goals. And that launched a multi-year process in Minnetonka of engaging our students, our staff, and our community in a much more robust way.
So you set the stage for that. You get that going. What in your mind becomes the pre-work then from an implementation status or implementation piece? What are you doing behind the scenes to really get this ball rolling?
Well, first of all, ramping up messaging in the community about the things we'll be talking about. And you know, asking questions about community engagement that are under your control. Nothing is more frustrating than asking people about things that you have no intention of changing or it's outside your scope of control. And so working with our board and our district office on what those things are, and then, you know, mapping out a year of what activity looks like and what reporting looks like. If you take a random survey and you have no idea when and how that will ever come back to you, you're just not as vested. And then you build distrust, like no one's listening to me. So identifying the what's that we really want community input on, and then developing practices for when we're having key decision points. How do we engage the community?
The piece that then I think folks that listen to this podcast get interested in is when you're meeting with your team and you're deciding, here's how we're going to engage with the community. How do you go about facilitating that conversation with your leadership team and then how that trickles down into building leadership teams?
Well, I'll pick one thing that we're working through right now, and this is a plane that hasn't landed and maybe it won't land. We'll see where it goes. Minnetonka hasn't done a building bond since the 90s. So we have done some, add a room here or there with bonding, but we have not done a significant ask. And so there isn't anyone within the system who has gone through the process, even on the board, gone through the process of how do we start this process and map it out. So first of all, I have a leadership team that I meet with weekly, and we talk about the process, and I just tell them, here's what we're laying out. And then I identify the people that will be critical in the planning and critical in the engagement process. And so on my team, my communications person that I work with and our finance and operations person mapped out, before we did anything with the board, we mapped out, what will this look like if it's a high quality engagement team? And we made the decision that we were gonna use a third party facilitator because it was important to us as we bring the community together that they didn't think the district is telling us what we need. And so I kept reiterating that. So then we identified a person who was a trusted community member who would be a great facilitator. And then we landed with that person and created a We started this work, the board set the goal in November. We started the work in about January, and then we launched a community information piece saying we need community members to join this facilities task force. And we mapped that out. We kept circling back on about probably every other week basis with our district leadership team, but we launched with our board publicly too. Our board was on board and expecting this work. And so we presented to the board that we're launching this task force and we're looking for community members. And then we would have about quarterly updates until we landed the plane. But with the leadership team, you know, we would pull in a expert in community survey and he would meet with the leadership team. Then they would meet with the task force team. And then we would prep with my leadership team as a district and say, this is what we're leaning. Two of my cabinet members, the associate superintendent and the executive director of student services, voluntold, depends how you talk to them, to serve on the facilities task force. We surveyed all of our teachers to get input and hosted a meeting at every building, and the building principals presented teacher feedback about what the building needed to the task force. And so there was this constant cycle of, here's this big project, here's where we are now, here's what we're working on with our leadership team. And almost on a weekly basis, with four members of my leadership team either leading the task force or participating, they were involved. And my technology person presented to the task force at one of the meetings. So, and my community education person, who's a lead, presented to the task force. So every member in the room played a role in that very big process. They presented to the board in November and December a $190 million improvement. The board's feedback was, we're worried about this with the need for operating levies. So we worked it back down to about $85 million. In that process of working it back down, we would continue to cycle through the cabinet, the leadership team, to say, here's where we are. And now it's out for review and comment at the state. The board hasn't decided if they're going to ask. But that's a process over about 15 months of from board direction through heavy community engagement. And I will tell you, in that one other piece that I didn't reference is personally, I have sent four letters to the community updating on major district goals, and each one referenced that process with a link to the website that shows where we are on it. And to date, all the way through board approval, going to review and comment, the community has not once said we're underinformed.
Sure. Well, that's perfect, because my next question was going to be around that, the framework around communication, right? Because what we know is there's this constant back and forth between internal, external communication. And so if we can just springboard on that for a second, what does that look like to design that communication flow, that cascade of, you know, you're sending that messaging out? How does that partner with all the other stuff, whether it's to building students, other community members?
I'll pick a different topic, but the cascade of messaging. We are reducing budget because we just can't keep up with inflation for the various different things. And last year we cut $3.7 million coming into the current school year. And then this year we were charged with another $5 million. And this is Minnetonka, where we haven't budget cut in 17 years. And so it was important to me to get the note out last spring, we're reducing. And it was very common for parents to reach out and say, you know, our third grade class is too big, please add another section. We just don't have the luxury of adding $500,000 of teachers over the summer. And so we had to schedule tightly and stick to it. And so I sent a message last spring saying, just, I want you to know, we cut $3.7 million. We're looking at another $5 million. Then I'm thinking, when am I going to be messaging to the community? And my threshold is when people tell me I've heard it too much, I've hit the right amount. And so in about November, I got this moniker of Dr. Doom. Every time I get a message from David Law, I know it's bad news. Well, that means that they're hearing it and they understand it. And so we went from having 15 members of our community joining us in advocacy for funding to 100 because it was real. What can we do? But our cadence of messaging was, I do a back to school and I try to do a quarterly message. And this, one of my New Year's resolutions was monthly, I will provide updates on the biggest things happening in the district. And I'll include, you know, I don't want this black cloud of budget reductions to be monopolizing my message. We have the one written for this week, and it's all about student engagement, something we're really proud of. And then buried in there, we have, hey, here's an update on funding. Here's an update on our facilities. Have a great spring break. We really appreciate whatever. Our cadence of messaging is thinking about the avenues we have to send messaging along with board meetings, because we cover things in board meetings, then the next day a message goes out to the community. But where are people getting information? And I still have people, even though I probably sent 6 messages in 12 months as letters to our staff in the community saying to me, you need to tell people about this. Okay, so I'm still, you know, our community, I'm still working on it.
So let's dive into, you mentioned student engagement. I know you and I have talked a little bit about that, and you've got some unique things going on there. What pieces of student engagement do you think are valuable to share with folks that would be listening to this podcast?
So some of it is just being fresh. You know, Bob, you and I have worked together a long time, trying to reinvent ourselves and how we do things. And I have a new board. On my current board, 3 have served for 4 years, 1 has served for 8, and 3 have served for 2. Or maybe it's 4, 2, and 2. Anyway, they're newish. And so the things that I'm doing are new to them. And I typically have done a school board listening session at the high school and both middle schools once a year. And this board said, we really want to get some new approaches to gathering student voice. And so we kicked off this year and said, here's our commitment. And some of it has been in place, but it hasn't been consistent. Every board meeting, a school presents work that is tied to the board goals. And my message to them is, bring students as often as you can. Let students tell the stories of what their experience is like. And so every board meeting starts with a principal and oftentimes a group of students on a different theme about either inclusion or leadership or academic excellence. Then we do, this board has adopted grade levels. So every 2 board members, 2 have adopted 9th grade and 2 10th grade. And they're going to shadow those kids through the 4 years of their time in high school. Now, some have seniors, so they'll roll back to freshmen. But we used to do a cross-grade 1-hour listening session. Now we're doing only 1 grade that's going to meet with board members maybe 8 times. And immediately the conversation was different. We talked to just freshmen and we could really dig into, what was your transition to high school like? And then for seniors, how prepared are you? And for juniors, what are you looking forward to? And what's your experience been like? So we did that once, and we're coming back around to doing that again, starting in about 3 weeks. But our board members are much more, when it was 7 board members, they were just listeners. Now that it's 2 board members, they're participants. And so they feel good about it. Then we did 2 very unique things this year. We have a class called Public Policy, and all they do is study public policies that are projects. And normally they have a competition. This fall's competition was study all the ways to involve students in the school board and make a recommendation. So 6 teams of 4 had a competition and recommended. They surveyed school board members from across the state. They talked to school board members. They surveyed students and staff and then presented to the board their perfect model. And 1 team won and presented publicly at a board meeting. And so the board got to hear from students what they think high quality engagement looks like at the board. So that is we're having our follow-up conversation tomorrow for what we might do next year. And then the last piece, we had gone to the National School Board Conference and listened to a whole bunch of different ways boards do student engagement. In Seattle Public Schools, I'm going to give them credit, does an annual forum where they take 2 or 3 board interest items and put kids at tables of 8 or 10, student leaders, and we do a little presentation to seed the conversation and then give kids 20 minutes to gather feedback. And so we just did our student forum in early March. On the 3 topics were experiential learning, belonging, and what's it feel like for the belonging efforts at the high school, and facility improvements. And we got writers to give feedback about that. And when our high school principal comes to the board to do his board report in May, he's going to share 10 minutes of feedback from the students on these 3 topics. We also include students in committees. We have a teaching and learning district-wide advisory committee made up of 40 high school students that are doing all the curriculum things we're doing. We've got students that sit on other various committees, but when we put together our presentation for the board tomorrow night, there's 24 different ways students have a chance to give feedback on what's happening, along with surveys on policy or surveys on climate. I feel pretty confident that we are a leader in student engagement with the volume of opportunities we've provided for kids.
So how does that come to be? Is it an organic process, right? You've talked about that the kids are involved, the kids are engaged, it's through a class. What does the coordination look like to get that ball rolling, get it actually up and running for you?
So if I was starting with nothing in place for next year, it starts with the board and the board saying this is a value. We have in our board goals innovating how we include student voice. Then we do our board planning sessions in November, and we talk about actually last May with our board, what are you hoping for? And they landed on a student forum on the public policy thing, and that board students would present at board meetings. And essentially, I gave them a menu of options, and they had heard a menu of options. Then, as superintendent, I look at these projects as they were and say, all right, who's going to be the leader for the student forum? And I met with our high school principal and assistant principal, our communications team, and formulated that project. And then I met with our leader for the experiential learning public policy class and laid it out. And then they asked me to come and kick it off. So I went to the class and said, here's the lay of the land with students on the school boards. And then, of course, they said, well, what do you think and what do you want? I said, doesn't matter. The board is curious what students think on this topic. So as a superintendent, I inserted myself into these. Some, like the student school board piece, I would say I was probably 75% involved with that. The teachers ran it. I helped the students. And some, like the student forum, that was probably 25% me, 75% the high school principal and his team, and they did a beautiful job. Kids' feedback was wonderful. And then for the board presentations involving students, I supervise principals directly. So as you know, I'm talking with them. I encourage them a few weeks ahead of presenting to say, what are you thinking about? And what might this look like? So it, as a superintendent, it's intentional. It's, I have this notion that my board goals involve this. And then I'm constantly, you know, behind the scenes, you know, as a superintendent, on my weekly updates to the board, I'm peppering them with, and you remember, this is how we're doing student engagement. This is what's coming. Here's what's going to be on future board meeting items. And if I was a first year superintendent, all of this might be overwhelming to me. But at a dozen years, I'm starting to feel like, you know, we've run enough of these projects that we know how to operationalize them and measure success.
One piece that I might be of interest is, how do you operationalize that with the board members themselves, right? In addition to like the weekly updates, there's work that goes into helping board members understand how to do this.
Well, one of the things when we were at the National School Board Conference, board members would bring back ideas, and I was thankful because they would say things like, we don't want to have this be your full-time job. Like, there was some superintendent who had 2 meetings a month for 3 hours with students. Like, well, that is a lot of work on a project for the percentage of my time. So setting expectations for the board about, you know, if this becomes a priority for the board, you are really saying this is going to be a chunk of time the superintendent's going to work on this, and managing that. And so that's about communicating with the board. How much time are you thinking you want me to spend on this? You know, I mentioned earlier, you know, we're doing a building bond and we're doing budget reductions and we're doing a literacy implementation and we're redoing our middle school schedule. There's other big work happening. Is it at that level of work? And we have managed, but it is about setting expectations. And, you know, as you talk about leadership and implementation, every time I talk about a superintendent sliding into the role, I say, in about August, meet with your board chair and vice chair and say, what are the things you think I'm working on this year? And what does it look like to make progress on those? And if that's a list of 100 things, you either communicate to the board that's not possible, or you look for a new job, because there's a limited amount of hours in the week. And, you know, as I talk to colleagues, and you know this well, there are some people who say, but I think I have to do it all. And then I would say, well, then you're not doing most of it well.
Well, that's a great feed into what I typically ask as a last question on these podcasts is, what if you're thinking about either a new superintendent or a superintendent that's changing jobs, and they say, oh, wow, this is what I want to do. I listened to this podcast. I want to do what David's doing in Minnetonka. What would the 1, 2, or 3 things be top of your list to say, okay, if you're going to do this, then here's for sure what you have to make sure you do?
Well, the first thing I do is every place has some good stuff happening. So if you're in a new job, start with what's already working, because some of what's already happening might be a great foundation to build from. And anywhere you go, either they've been doing it, they used to do it. And so you start with that base, and then you set some targets for what will it look like if it runs well, and then you design it. And for me, what it looks like when it runs well is that our kids, when I'm presenting on this tomorrow night, I'm bringing 3 students. And the board is going to be able to talk to 3 students who were at the student forum, who one of them was on the policy committee. If you're talking about at the adult level, what our students are experiencing, nothing is more powerful than having them sit next to you and say, well, what are you experiencing? So for that new superintendent, if they want to at the end of the year say, there were multiple opportunities for students to be engaged, it was obvious, we could see their voice in action, and we were considering it as we designed future. And from that, then you can look at how involved do I want to be? How much time do I have in this? And I will tell you that, and you know this, the best part of the job and the hardest thing to do is to be in schools and in classrooms. And this is a structured way to valuably be in class. And I balance it going back to the other topic about engagement. I've got an Instagram account, and I never miss a chance to brag about our kids. If I'm seeing a presentation or sitting in a classroom, I take a picture and say, hey, do you mind if I post this? Then I say, look at these amazing kids. And it serves a whole bunch of purposes. That activity's happening. The superintendent's in the classroom. Kids' voice matters. And that was a half an hour visit and a 10-second post. So I talked to new leaders about how important it is to be visible, and that this is a structured way to be visible. And one, generally, very fun. And awesome kids.
Well, thank you. This has been a great topic. I think a lot of people are going to get some value out of listening to what you have going on and how you're doing it. And again, I'm happy to have had the opportunity to talk with David Law, Superintendent of Minnetonka Schools here in Minnesota. Thanks so much for being with me today, David.
Bob, thanks. Great to visit with you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Rethink Possible with Bob McDowell, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.